Our last speaker today in this panel, Zergi Zoria, Senior Economist in Agriculture and Environmental Services Department of the World Bank, resident in Washington, D.C. Zergi is the Senior Economist in Agriculture and Environmental Services Department, working on issues pertaining to agricultural policies and strategies, food prices, management of public expenditure, and global food security. Zergi joined the bank in 2005 through the Young Professionals Program, and prior to the AES, worked in three bank regions, Europe and Central Asia, East Asia and Pacific, and Africa. Zergi holds the master's degree in agricultural economics from the Agricultural University of Zhytomyr, Ukraine, and the PhD in agricultural economics from the Georg August University of Göttingen, Germany. I'm very pleased to offer him the floor.
Okay, let me try here. Good morning, everybody. It's my pleasure to be here today. Many things I do, I manage the multi-donor trust fund established to help developing countries, low-income countries mainly, to respond to the recurring global food price spikes. It's called the Global Food Crisis Response Program, GFRP. Some of you may have heard about it. Canada is the large donor of that fund, and it's my pleasure to be in Canada to say thank you to the government and the people of Canada to support that fund and other funds of the World Bank. And I, as I have learned from this morning presentation, is also McGill to help some countries which were the part of my country where I was born, in Ukraine. I'll talk about Central Asia right now. My presentation is based on the experience of how developing countries have responded to the recent global food price spikes. I will also talk about how to move from short-term to long-term and what the role of the World Bank in this process and other organizations. It's the presentation based on my knowledge of the multi-donor trust fund I mentioned. It has 22 lending operations in 22 countries, and we finance a number of the analytical studies. But also based on my experience in Africa region, which is the poorest and where the focus of these short-term response operations was, where I spent 4 years mainly in East Africa, Uganda, Tanzania, Zambia, South Sudan. So I'll speak about three things: what we can do in the short term, what the countries can do in the short term, what the options they have, why it's important to focus on the long run, and how to get it right. In other words, how not to lose the sight of the long-term objective of the food security while addressing the short-term challenges. I have 10 minutes, you know, so I'll let me start to go into the issues. When countries face a spike of the global food prices, the fastest way to reduce local food prices is to reduce or nullify the import tariffs. That's what many countries did. But sometimes import tariffs are already low, so what do you do? Then countries can reduce domestic prices. You can have the value-added tax for food. You can have the sales tax for food. You can fix prices. Not very advisable, but sometimes the government do these things. But in many low-income developing countries, there is no food taxes. So what the government can do? The government can use the food stocks to use them, release at market price or below market price until the import arrives. The challenge is there are not many countries have the public food stocks. And I'll talk about it a little bit later. Then some countries can use the safety nets. They can scale up safety net support in times of the food price spikes to mitigate some impact of the food price spike, especially if they're the temporary food price spikes. Because if you wanted to solve structural problems or the long-term problems with the safety nets, you will be unsuccessful. Safety nets is to solve temporary problems and maybe to show some way to the long-term in developing countries, because I talk about the affordability issues and all other things. But again, here, not many low-income countries have safety nets. And you don't build safety nets in times of crisis. You build safety nets before crisis starts. So what do you do? Simulate next season supply response, production stimulus. What we had in the United States in 2008, stimulus, but developing countries can do production stimulus too, just to make sure that next year, next harvest is produced enough to feed the people. And that's what many countries have actually done, because this is the options they only had. Looking on the table, actions taken by the 81 developing countries in response to 2008 price spikes, the most sort of used measures were reducing import tariffs, releasing stocks, and supporting agricultural production. I would say restricting exports and scaling safety nets was also among the measures were taken. But I guess it's no question, and there is empirical proof, there are many studies, that in the short term, the global food price spikes have negative, they increase poverty. So let me put it that way. And the bank estimated that the food price spikes 2010-2011 resulted in a situation when 49 million more people were pushed back to poverty if we would not experience that price shock. But in the long run, the situation is a little bit different. And as you can see, you have the smaller number of the impacted people. You still have the negative, net effect. There is still sort of more net buyers than net sellers in the developing countries. But because of the higher prices may lead to the production response, which eventually will reduce the food prices and reduce the poverty. But the big question is how to go from 49 to 34. It's not automatic. You know, we know that food prices in developing countries, in developed countries, we have the high elasticity of supply. In developing countries, it depends on many things. So the big question is how to get it right. And especially on the point is how to get it right in terms of how to focus on the long-term issues when there are so many short-term emergencies every day. How not to lose sight of that important time frame. Good policies and high-quality investment in agriculture are the key to long-term food security. You have heard about these measures a lot during the last 2 days and maybe at other forums. I don't think we disagree on this is are the keys to the any successful long-term food security agenda. I guess where I want to focus more, because, you know, the time 10 minutes constraints is where, from my experience, when the countries sort of try to focus on these long-term issues, but there's still you have the short-term recurring price spikes, political pressure, social media, how you need to deal with this. And there are different ways the countries, there are three things I want to emphasize are important to pay attention to. And important to have the facts and have the advocacy and the evidence-based decision-making before any action is taken. And it's three things is to identification of sources of local food price changes, the second identification of sources of local food price volatility, and the management of the public stocks. These are the typical things which are the low-income countries constrain, and they make some decisions based on what they know, which not always what is really is. The first, we need to do a better job to identify sources of local shocks. Yesterday, we had several presentations which made it very clear that there is differences between what's going on at the global level and at the local level. One needs to really be specific what market we talk about. So when local food prices go up, it's not necessarily due to the increase of global prices. We studied price transmission of large sample of developing countries using the FAO-JUS data set, and we found out, so if you look on that, 43% of the market, so there is the regional subdivision, the left side, you look, 43% of the markets in developing countries are sort of connected to the world markets. We say that these markets are co-integrated. So in only 40% of cases, you can be sure that local prices are affected by the global development. In 60% of cases, it's not a case. So the second finding is that it takes a relatively long time for global food price to be transmitted into the local price shock. So on average, when you look on the speed of transmission, it's error correction term, but when you translate it into the number of months, it takes about 5-6 months on average to correct 50% of this equilibrium of the price shock. So it takes time, even if the co-integrated markets. And third, there is seldom full price transmission. So if you look on the right table and the column extent, this is the elasticity of how much of the global price shock is get transmitted into the local price shock in the long run. So it's never one. I mean, sometimes it's one, but on average it's 76%. So the point is, the bottom line of this is that it means that in many cases, countries have time to prepare. So when there is a global price shock, it takes time until it translates it into the local price shock. So it takes time to prepare. And the second conclusion, that in the short term, the local factors play a much more important role in determining what the prices do at local level than actually at the global level. The second thing which often policymakers should face, and it's very key to make the right decision, is to identify what drives the local food price volatility. And again, the price volatility is often the result of the local factors. Yes, the global food price volatility increased when you compare to the last two decades. But in many developing countries, price volatility is actually much higher than that on the global world markets. You take maize, wheat, sorghum, it's much higher in Africa especially. So the reason of that volatility is large gap between the export parity and import parity prices. So you look at the example of Ethiopia wheat, and you look on the red line, which is the export parity price, and blue line is the import parity price, and in between is $200. So when you have the good, and therefore, because of that large gap within which the private trade is not profitable, you have the large swings between the good harvest and the bad harvest. When the harvest is good, then prices go down, and prices is bad. When the harvest is bad, the prices go up, and that between bad and good can be $200 a ton. Right? So it's a huge amount. It has nothing to do with the global food price volatility. It's just bad harvest at home, good harvest. But the policy measures can exaggerate that. So if you look in the period from 2009 to now, you will see that the local prices in Ethiopia were above the import parity. And that's the indication of the role of the import protection policy, or whatever the government decision is to authorize the import or step up to import. And it just does not allow the private sector for private arbitrage to keep domestic prices in bay. So the local volatility is not always the result of the global volatility, in contrast to what many politicians would actually claim. They would say, oh, we have local volatility because something going on the global market. So when you make that conclusion, be careful on identifying sources right, because if you identify sources wrong, your policy actions will be also wrong. And the last point is the proper management of the public stocks. What we see in the years when the stocks are low, as was with the red line, there is a higher probability that the supply shock will result in spike. When the stocks are high, then the probability that the supply shock can be mitigated. And based on that graph for the global markets, there are often conclusions are made that this is a public stocks is solution to the local food price volatility. It's true for the private stocks, because the private stocks react to the prices, price differentials, interest rates, storage costs. Not for the public stocks. And I'm out of time. Probably will be the questions in it, but for the public stocks, management is not driven by what is driven by the private stocks. The private stocks usually buy low, sell high. The public stocks buy high, sell low. And if you have the budget constraints, that is not sustainable. Thank you. I guess the food security is a very complex issue. It's true. But the good news that if we get it right, there will be huge benefits for everybody and for the globe. So thank you, and I'm looking forward for the exciting Q&A session.
Thank you very much.